The extraordinary story of the alleged $165 million payroll fraud against the tax office has shone a light on the practice of phoenixing. That's where failing companies are shut down by their directors, who then go on to start a new firm while avoiding paying any of the money they owe their workers and creditors. Labor has announced a new policy cracking down on the practice. One of the key measures will require all company directors to get a unique director identification number. The move has been welcomed by both big business and the unions. Helen Anderson is a law professor at Melbourne University. She co-authored a major report on phoenixing. She's been advising on some of this policy design. Helen Anderson, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Good morning, Hamish.
5 years ago, back in 2012, phoenixing was estimated to cost the economy as much as $3.2 billion a year, and that's billion. Given it's such a significant problem, why is it taking so long for policymakers to crack down on it?
It's actually quite difficult because you need to distinguish between legal phoenixing and illegal phoenixing. And most people struggle to understand the difference. Legal phoenixing is where one, as you said before, one closes down, another starts. But it's been a genuine business failure and the entrepreneur is simply having another go. So it's very difficult from the outside to see which is which, and therefore it's very important that whatever measures are introduced don't interfere with legitimate business rescues.
So how wide is the practice, both legal and illegal?
Well, that's precisely the problem, because there are no statistics kept on how many companies close and start again legitimately. We simply don't know how many of all of those that close and start again are illegal ones.
Right. Is there an easy way to tell the difference between the legal and illegal practice, though?
An easy way, unfortunately, no. Right. Otherwise, it would have been done.
Right. But how do you spot it? What's the process for identifying it?
Well, the way that we spot it is that, or the way that it can be spotted is that it needs to be investigated, each individual case. Where companies go into liquidation, there is an insolvency practitioner who does go through the affairs of the company. It can be spotted if those people are adequately funded to do the appropriate investigations. But if that is not done, then they might have their suspicions, but they can never be really sure that it has involved improper action.
I'm just trying to help all of us get a clear understanding, though, of this. What would be the hallmarks of it being illegal practice?
Yes. Okay. Well, that in a sense is easy. It all goes down to the intention of the directors. Was this a legitimate business failure? Or did the directors do it on purpose? So when I say that's easy, that's exactly where the cutoff line is. It's discerning it that's the hard thing. So from the liquidator's perspective, they need to be able to see things such as a business was sold from A to B at what appears to be significantly less than a proper market value, or there's been repeated patterns of this behaviour.
Got it. I think we're all there with you now. Phoenixing seems to have played a role in this major payroll fraud against the ATO. Can you explain what went on there and how?
Look, I wouldn't like to comment simply because I'm not across all of the details, but certainly what has happened in many cases is that companies are formed and dummy directors are put up. So they are people who have no assets. It's never worth suing anyone without any assets. So they are nominally put as directors. If the ATO then levies a director penalty notice against them, it's not worth their while because the person has nothing. These people have not been involved. And that's, in fact, why our director identity number is a significant recommendation to try and get rid of these sorts of practices.
Yeah, so what would be a director identity number? How would that work? And how would it prevent this sort of practice?
It certainly doesn't prevent it, but what it does do is it forces people to quote a number when a company is incorporated, and we have recommended that a password be part of that people have to register a company using their DIN and password and do it online. Then ASIC therefore can accumulate the information and spot patterns. If there is a 93-year-old grandmother, for example, running 20 construction companies, then their data analytics will pick that up and alert them to ask more questions.
Is that a hypothetical or has that happened?
Certainly within the building and construction area, there are a lot of elderly ladies who appear to be running multiple construction companies. So, yes, it is a real example.
Who knew? Are they doing this from nursing homes?
Who knows whether these people are in fact relatives or simply people whose details have been obtained. But can I also say that one of the things that the DIN will target is deliberate misspellings of your own name or deliberate misquoting of your birth date. And that is what people do at the moment, so that if ASIC does chase you up, you say, oh, gee, I didn't mean to do that. But whenever you use simply names and birth dates, it's very difficult for computers to match people up. And the DIN is a very simple way around that. By having a unique number for people, we can keep track of them. We can decide, the ATO, for example, could decide to deny their next company an ABN, which will disrupt this sort of behaviour. The ATO, the Fair Work Ombudsman, everyone has much better information if we can track these individuals more accurately.
I reckon there's a story in that for someone, the granny tax rorters across Australia. In terms of solving this problem, are you optimistic? Because you've obviously been working with some policy proposals here, but you know it is the opposition that's putting these forward at this point in time. Do you think that there is motivation, that there is momentum to actually get on top of this?
Oh, absolutely. The ATO has been running the Interagency Phoenix Forum for years. That's supported by the government. The government, we have put our proposals to them and they are considering it. We have four Senate inquiries that have supported the DIN. Productivity has supported it. There's not a single plausible voice out there that has said anything against it. So on the DIN, for example, I'm very confident that will succeed. And in terms of other measures such as higher penalties, I'm sure that there is broad support for that, including statements by the Prime Minister earlier in the year that they were going to, and last year, that they were going to crack down, for example, on arrangements that exploited vulnerable workers. So I am confident of those.
Excuse me. Do you expect that the Coalition, though, more broadly will back this policy?
The Labor policy has only got, that I've seen, has only got those three elements. The DIN, the higher penalties, and change to the one of the Fair Work Act, employee entitlement provisions under the Corporations Act. They've actually already put out a discussion paper on that very section to assist the Department of Employment. So in those three elements, I'm reasonably confident that the government will give support. We have a huge report full of recommendations. Not all of them will fly, of course, but I'm confident that there is a groundswell of support behind doing something about Phoenix activity.
Helen Anderson, thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Hamish.
That's Helen Anderson, professor at the University of Melbourne's Law School and an investigator in the Phoenix research team.